We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Flynn. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be talking with Pago Shagan from, we're going to be dealing with the census. We're going to take a break from all the news that's going out there. Maybe a little refresher, get your mind on something else. Very, very, very important this census business. And it's not to take it lightly, even in the time in which we find ourselves now. The portion of the week is Tzav, can be found in the book of Leviticus, chapter 6 and following. We're probably going to talk a little about Pesach. Passover is a week and a half away. There's lots of wonderful Jewish music out here throughout the show. A great Hasidic story all the way at the end. But before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Israel imposed strict guidelines as the number of corona cases rose past 3,000. The country will essentially be closed for 7 days. People are allowed to walk only 100 yards outside of their houses. As of Friday morning, 12 Israelis have died from COVID. In other news, one Arab terrorist was shot and killed. Another was wounded and escaped after throwing rocks at an IDF vehicle in Judea. Israel's Supreme Court ruled that the country's internal security agency, that's into the FBI, can track the cell phones of Israelis who are infected with the coronavirus. Israelis with the virus are supposed to stay quarantined. Critics have said that the tracking would infringe on civil liberties. In the sport, two members of the YU men's basketball team were chosen for the NCAA Double Division III All-American team. Ryan Terrell, keep that name in mind, you might actually go someplace. Ryan Terrell was chosen to the first team and Gabe Leifert to the fourth. YU coach Elliot Simas was chosen coach of the year after leading the Maccabees to a 29-1 season. The season was suspended because of corona. Terrell was also named Skyline Conference Player of the Year. And finally, the Kinneret, the Sea of Galilee, Israel's largest reservoir, measured less than 2 feet below capacity. Since the beginning of the winter, the Kinneret has risen over 8 feet. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Hey, Michigan. The census is only 9 questions and takes about 10 minutes. And money for your kids' school lunches and food assistance relies pretty heavily on your participation. It's easy. So fill out the census this spring and count everyone in your home. When everyone counts, everyone wins. To learn more, please visit myvoicecounts.org. That's myvoicecounts.org.
Herschel Flynn here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Haig Oshagan from the New Michigan Media. How are you today, Haig?
All right, thank you. How are you?
Good. Good, thank God. We're doing well, and I hope everybody in the North is doing well. Okay, so we're talking census today. So let's, before doing anything else, let's go back and look at the mandate for the census. You can tell our listening audience, why is it that every 10 years there is a census in the United States of America?
Yes, that's right. We've had the census since 1790, every 10 years. It's actually the only nation that's done it every 10 years without interruption. Some European countries during the war years didn't have it done. But we've done it every 10 years. And it's been an important aspect of governance and democracy in America. It determines a lot of things, both financially as well as politically.
Okay. Why do you think the Founding Fathers felt it necessary to institute a 10-year census?
Well, it's difficult to do it to do a census and to count every single person across the nation. Every single person is a challenging enterprise, and the 10 years that we have between counts is primarily because of the difficulty in doing it, you know, more frequently. As it is, the cost for the census is in the billions of dollars, in the $15 billion range, employs 400,000 people to just go knocking door to door. So the enterprise is daunting. It takes a few years to ramp up to it in the first place. And so the 10-year gap makes sense in terms of being able to do it. Logistically. The reason for it is to know how many people live in various parts of the United States. The idea for that is that government has to be responsive to its population. There are needs that people have, counties have, cities have, states have, and those needs are addressed by the federal government based on how many people live in an area. And so if a state has more people living in an area, it can ask for further or greater government assistance than if fewer people live in an area. So that's one of the reasons. That's a financial reason for it. Every year, the federal government gives back to the states something in the neighborhood of $700 billion. That's money collected from our taxes. And of that $700 billion, with a B, how much each state gets depends on how many people live in that state. And how many people live in a state is determined by the census count every 10 years. So the federal government assistance to communities is determined greatly by the census count. And then secondly, of course, our voice in Washington, D.C., how many people live in a state determines how many representatives a state has in Congress. And that's based on the census count as well.
That sounds like an also county representatives are in Congress. So our guest today is Peg O'Shagan, who's from New Michigan Media. We're talking about census. Why has there been this tremendous media push? We're getting these commercials all over the place, in the little shower. What's the big deal? I don't remember there being in years past such a blitz to get people to, it's like get out the vote time, campaign. Why is this get out the count campaign?
I know, you're right, Rabbi. I mean, this has been an exceptional year in getting the census count out. Partly it's because of what's at stake. Detroit, for example, in 2010, had the worst count of any major American city. And stood to lose potentially millions of dollars. We can talk about the numbers, and I can also talk about the numbers in Washtenaw County, for example. But so much is at stake, and once the count is made, it's the same number that's used for the next 10 years. And so a low count this year, 2020, will affect, Washtenaw County or the state of Michigan for the next 10 years. And states have just gotten aware of what's at stake with the census count, more aware of the minority populations or rural populations, or poorer populations that tend not to participate in the census at the right rate, or children, for example, who are generally undercounted. And so the effort has been made. Michigan has spent about, raised by the legislature, about $15 million to spend on the census. Illinois has raised $30 million to spend on the census. California has raised $100 million to spend on the census. And part of it, I think, fairly, is also tied to the sense that the federal government is not doing as much as it possibly can to get a high census count. And so the states have to sort of bridge the gap, in a sense. The conversation on citizenship, there's a fear that that has chilled some people's willingness to participate. There have been fewer people hired this year for the census than in past years. There are fewer census offices this year than in the past. And it's the first year that the census is being done online. And so there are all kinds of fears that the online process might not go smoothly or be reasonable for some people to use. And so there's a concern that we might get actually a worse count this year, nationally as well as statewide, than in previous years. And so that's also part of, I think, the push to do more this year than in the past.
Okay. I have a bunch of questions that you've raised now. Let's even go through them. So one of the major questions I was planning on asking is, it seems that pretty much from the onset of the census, going back to the early 1800s, race was a question that's on the census. How do you identify yourself? And it gives a whole list of things. It even has a question, do you consider yourself Hispanic? A separate question. I can understand that being a turnoff, and it is a bit of a turnoff for me, especially coming to hypersensitive that Jews are, because in 1933, the Nazi Party conducted a census to find out where all the Jews were. So there's this, I can understand people not wanting it. So why is it that for so long that there's been the race question on the census?
Well, the answer for why the census included the race question in the beginning, I don't know. You would have to go back quite a bit, as you said.
Three fifths of a slave is considered one slave was considered three fifths of a person as far as representation in Congress. That was
right.
A compromise. That was
no, that's bad. Right. I mean, there were reasons for it, but I would have to look that up. I mean, to say definitively when the decision was made to include it, and what was the legislation behind it or the reasoning behind it. I can tell you that groups nowadays do want to be included in this count. The Arab American community, for example, tried to get its category on the census as a racial category. It would have been, it's called the MENA category, Middle Eastern and North African, because currently, for example, Arab Americans would put themselves as white or write in something at the bottom. I'm not sure if Jews have had, the Jewish community has tried to have Jewish or Hebrew or Jewish, I guess, on the census form itself. I'm Armenian, and the Armenian community has made efforts to write Armenian at the bottom of the census. You know, there's a place where you can actually put your how you identify. There are monies tied to this, however, today. Communities that have large numbers of a certain population can ask for additional federal funds, for example, for English as a second language, maybe, or mental health services, maybe, or children's services, maybe, or services that are more specific or particular to a community. But the identification of that community has to be made somehow, and that's done by the census. And so if the Arab American community were able to identify themselves as having, let's say, 400,000 Arab Americans in the Dearborn or Metro Detroit area, social service agencies that primarily serve Arab communities would stand to be able to ask for greater federal funds to service those communities. So there is that connection with the actual racial count, as well as the financial consequences to it. But you know, uh-huh. You bring up Hitler and you bring up the tracking of people. That doesn't happen in the United States, not in our census. The confidentiality of the census information is at a very high level. The laws for confidentiality are some of the strictest in the United States. Census data is kept confidential for 72 years from the date it is collected. And it is not shared with anyone. It is not shared with any other agency. I mean, it's not shared with the IRS. It's not shared with the ICE agency. It's not shared with FBI, Homeland Security, police, Department of Justice, insurance companies, businesses. No one gets to see the data for 72 years. And so it's entirely confidential and safe as information.
Okay. Our guest today, again, is Hage Poshagen from New Michigan Media. We're talking about census. There's always going to be paranoia. You have a person, for example, who is an undocumented immigrant who might feel a little bit leery. Should they go on the census or maybe take the chance of them coming to get deported?
Yeah, that's exactly the challenge that we face. And minorities tend to answer the census at a lower rate. And one of the reasons is what you're bringing up. First, in terms of the census itself, everyone who lives in America needs to be counted. It doesn't matter if you're a citizen or not a citizen. It doesn't matter if you have a green card. It doesn't matter if you have no papers. It doesn't matter if you are here with an F1 student visa studying in America or an H1 visa as a skilled worker. If you live in America, you count for the census. So everyone who's living here should be counted. That's by the census. That's what the census expects. But of course, there's the fear that you mentioned, that people are worried that as the information is filled out, that how many people live in a home and each one's name is asked, that they will be tracked in some way. As I said, it's confidential, but the challenge is to convince people that it's confidential, to convince someone who is afraid of being deported that don't worry, you should fill out the census, it's entirely safe. The issue we face is not just getting the message of the census out. It's also having that message given by trusted voices. The reason the state of Michigan came to me, asked me to work with ethnic and minority media across the state, is because ethnic and minority media, such as your radio program, are trusted voices in our minority communities. You as the host of the station, if you say on your show that the census is safe or confidential, that is a much more believable statement for people than if I were just to say it or the governor were to just say it. And so it's not just get the message out, it's also to get it out by voices that people trust, whether it's a rabbi or an imam or a priest or a school principal or a community activist, someone that's trusted by someone who actually has doubts about the census. But that's exactly the issue you bring up, is that one of the core challenges that we face with minority communities.
Okay. Let's talk maybe a little bit of numbers then. What, based on your findings, when you're talking about minorities, what percentage of the Michigan population would you say would fit the minority category, which is going to be considered crucial now? I mean, everybody's crucial, but... Where's your universe focused? How many people? What percentage of the state? Peg?
Well, it varies across the state in terms of, but we have about 2 million minorities across Michigan, 2.5 million.
The
population of the state is about 10 million. And it's concentrated in certain areas. And those areas where minority populations are concentrated are where the count tends to be lower. The Detroit metro area, for example. So as an example, Detroit in 2010, the response rate in Detroit, that is when the census came in the mail and people voluntarily filled it and sent it back, was at 64%. which is the worst of any major American city. That means 36% of Detroiters, a few hundred thousand people, did not fill out the census. And someone had to come knock on their doors for them to fill out the census. In Washtenaw County, we have about 370,000 or so residents in the county. 12% are black, 10% are Asian. Those are the largest minority populations in Washtenaw County. And where African-American and Asian populations are high, the census count is low. And the effort has to be made in particular in those areas. The cost for the census is high for any city that receives federal money. Each person not counted costs federal monies, not for 1 year, but for 10 years, because the count is only taken once every 10 years. We can talk about the money issue, but my responsibility is with the minority populations across the state through the ethnic media that they use, whether it's newspapers, radio, television, online. And I've been dealing with the state from all the way down here to all the way up north with, Marquette, for example, with Native American populations and tribal media. But maybe we should talk in more. I can give you more particular numbers to give a sense of the scale of the issue, Rabbi, if you'd like.
Okay, we've got a very good picture. I've got other questions. Our guest again today is Dago Chagin from Numeracy Media. We're talking about the census, which the day census day is technically April 1st. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's like a day that they picked for some. I'm not sure why they picked that date, because everyone has received the census already. The census began to appear in mailboxes March 12th, so everyone should have gotten it by now.
I filled mine out on March 14th. This will be my third census that I'm filling out. Before that, it was my mother. But you mentioned before the first year that people will be able to fill out the census online, which I found to be very convenient. But when I was filling it out, what did come into my mind was hackers. What about, you have this problem with the voting that's going on with the elections and people hacking in, and is it secure? And if you're going to put it out online, can some nefarious organization, some black web people come in and move populate the numbers from Detroit to San Antonio? The thoughts that were flying through my head.
This is the first time it's been done this way. In the past, you would have gotten the paper version in the mail, which you would have filled out and mailed back. So this is the first year it's been done this way. The Census Bureau, so I don't work for the Census, but the Census Bureau has assured us that they have put in every possible measure at the highest levels to make sure that the data is incorruptible. In fact, the final repository of the census information is not connected to the internet at all, so no one can hack into it because it's isolated from the internet. But there are two issues, I think, here. One is that people will try to scam other people, acting as if they are from the Census Bureau, and sending people emails and information to try to get people to divulge data, their own personal information. And that needs to be, people need to be aware of what the census questions are. For example, it will never ask you for your social security number. It doesn't ask you for your income. So people have to be aware that that anything suspicious in terms of questions it could be a scam. People have to be aware of this sort of a thing that might happen with this online version of it. But the second thing that happens here is that not everywhere do we have fast internet or internet access even. And so the 80% of Americans are going to get what you got, Rabbi, the card in the mail where you have a code and you get online and fill it out. But where internet is slow, people will get the original paper version to fill out. Detroit, for example, is the reverse of the national picture. Over 80% of Detroiters are going to get the paper version or have gotten the paper version right away because internet is very slow in most parts of the city. And there are other places like that as well. And so the concern is that some people might get the electronic version to fill out and yet not have internet access or be willing to use their minutes or time to actually get online and do the census. So there's a concern that the online version might lower participation rates as well. So.
Okay, that's very much understood. Okay, so just briefly, if you could, just maybe we can discuss and people should be aware, what are the 9 questions that are asked that was mentioned in the commercial we played before you came on?
So the 9 questions on the census asks how many people live at this address, anyone else who would normally be living here who's not there right now, whether you own or rent where you are, what the phone number is, what your name is, what your gender is, what your age is, whether you're Hispanic, Latino, or Spanish, and then what your race is. That's it. But that's for each person living there. These are the questions.
Right, understood. Okay, that's going to wrap it up. If there's anything else you want to share aside from this, people, if you haven't done it yet, it's been sitting on, most likely it's been sitting on your desk at home for the better part of 2 weeks, and why haven't you gotten the computer and fill it out? But April 1st is the day. It should be done by then. After that, the government comes to start looking for you. Why is this address not filled out? Anything you want to wrap it up with, Peggy or Shagan from New Media, Michigan Media?
Yes, thank you for having me on the show, Rabbi. Michigan gets about $30 billion a year with the B from the federal government on the census. This funds every program that we are aware of. I mean, from Head Start to student loans, to housing, to food, to healthcare, to road construction. And we need to get our fair share for our state and for our county, for our city. And that's only done if we fill out the census and send it back. So I encourage everyone to do it, to send it back so that we get what we deserve back from the federal government for our communities.
Okay, that's wonderful. That's going to wrap it up. Our guest today, again, has been Hank O'Shagan from the New Michigan Media. We're talking about the census. And, hey, maybe we'll revisit this in 10 years with the 2023 census.
Yes, I look forward to it.
Okay, thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Just a reminder, Encompass Healthcare, Dr. Bruce Rubin, is making home visits for people who have tested positive for coronavirus and are at home. Free visits, no insurance necessary, no cash, nothing. But to make sure that you don't go to a hospital, our systems are already being overwhelmed. So if you have or you know someone who has tested positive for coronavirus and starting to experience symptoms, call 248-624-9800. Again, 624-9800. Up next, for your listening pleasure, we've got 3 new songs coming up right at you. This one coming up is Michal Azulay is the artist. spell bracha v'hatzlacha, to have a blessing and success. That's it.
ומלא גדול משלוש ליבינו לטויבו, לטויבו. ומלא גדול משלוש ליבינו לטויבו, מי צבלו. ומלא גדול משלוש ליבינו לטויבו, לטויבו. ומלא גדול משלוש ליבינו לטויבו. וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, בכל בכל מעשה ידינו. וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, בכל בכל מעשה ידינו. וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, בכל בכל מעשה ידינו. וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, בכל בכל מעשה ידינו. משלוש ליבינו לטויבו, לטויבו. ומלא 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 כגל משלוש ליבינו לטויבו. מצב לא. וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, בכל בכל מעשה ידינו. וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, בכל בכל מעשה ידינו. שלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, בכל בכל מעשה ידינו. ושישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, ושישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, בכל בכל מעשה ידינו. וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, בכל בכל מעשה ידינו. וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, וסישלח ברוכו ואצלוכו, בכל בכל מעשה ידינו.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Shelton, and here's your hosting of the Church. Up next for you, Klezmer aficionados, it's the Krakow Klezmer Band. Brand new. This is actually an old Polish klezmer, Czechoslovakian klezmer song. It's called Ide Chana, which means come on, Chana, let's dance. And there's various versions. Since I don't speak the language they're speaking, I don't know if this is the political version or the body version, you'll forgive me, but it's a real nice tune. Let's listen.
Michigan. The census is only 9 questions and takes about 10 minutes. And money for your kids' school lunches and food assistance relies pretty heavily on your participation. It's easy. So fill out the census this spring and count everyone in your home. When everyone counts, everyone wins. To learn more, please visit myvoicecounts.org. That's mivoicecounts.org.
So, Finn, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Up next, this is really new. This came out just Thursday afternoon, and I'm kind of amazed. I don't know if it was remotely, or maybe it was probably most likely it was done a long time ago, releasing it now. But this is Simcha Lehner, and the song is called You Go. Understand when he says it.
Every day, all around, people aim to bring us down, feeling shaken to the core. They can hurt, they can maim, we'll be here just the same, standing the way we were before. We go on, yes we go on, there is nothing we can overcome. We are strong, yes we are strong.
We all know there's an opiate epidemic, but Advanced Rapid Detox has a solution for people addicted to pain pills, heroin, and dependent on Suboxone and methadone. Advanced Rapid Detox performs detox under sedation in the hospital. Patients sleep through withdrawals and wake up without cravings. Dr. Julia Aronoff and the staff at Advanced Rapid Detox help people restore their lives and the lives of their families. Addiction affects everyone, even in the Jewish community, and Advanced Rapid Detox is there to help. Call 800-603-1813. That's 800-603-1813. Or visit them online at www.advancedrapiddetox.com.
Here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. The portion of the week is the portion of Tav. It's found in Leviticus chapter 6 and following, but I recommend that you give a look at it over during the week. We're going to be talking about Haggad a little bit. The very last paragraph of the Haggadah, which is a book which was compiled, I don't know how many years ago. As far as Jewish books goes, it's fairly new. I would say maybe the last 1,200 years, maybe 1,000 years. I don't know if somebody wants to contact me on rabbifinland.com if they did their research and know exactly when the Haggadah was put together the way that we have it in its current format. That would be wonderful. I'd appreciate the information. But the last paragraph is a song. It's after the actual Passover Seder has been complete. There are various different songs that talk about, one of them talks about, we know that God takes care of us, and we know that God does the things for us. It's a different one. The last one is called Haggadah. This is classic. One of the first CDs that I got way back when we first started it was a two CD, over 50 different versions of this song, Haggadah. And everybody has their own different version. Maybe next people will play a version, sometimes if there's new music out of it, other people. And we'll see. There are some very good a cappella ones that I like, and we'll probably be playing those during the upcoming weeks after Pesach. So she really isn't even playing all the music, so we'll put one of those in up there. Well, what's the story over here? It's a whole line in succession story. In fact, there's something that everybody knows the term, like the Lube Goldberg machine, which is basically this big convoluted machine that has lost a tremendous amount of parts and comes out and just puts out the same thing. The Haggadah might be considered like the first Lube Goldberg because, and in fact, in Yiddish, there's an expression when something is like very convoluted and it's like taking a long time. The expression is that it's a Haggadah. This is just like going through the Haggadah because there's different parts. Okay, first, Dad bought a goat. A cat ate the goat. And then what we do is we say that it's not just the cat ate the goat. It's like the cat ate the goat that Dad bought. And then a dog comes and bites the cat. Eventually, the dog just bit the cat. We say the dog bit the cat. It ate the goat that Dad bought. And this is the way that it goes. And then a stick came and hit the dog. And the stick hit the dog that ate the cat, that bit the cat that ate the goat that Dad bought. And this is the way it goes all the way until we finally get to the end of this whole huge progression that comes along. The Holy One, blessed be he, and slaughters the angel of death. And which then would be the ultimate in the Messianic era, because we know that when the Messiah comes, the idea of death after the resurrection of all those who have passed away, the whole concept of death will be removed from the world. And that's what this whole song is leading up to. Now, it's called the Haggadah because we give it this term, this rubrics, because we could have just said, listen, God, bring Mashiach. We could have a whole song. We could have said, listen, God, bring Mashiach. I could have put him entertained with my voice. And it would have been a song, too. And it would have been a fine ending. But we go through this whole process because we're in Golis. We're in exile for 2,000 years already. And there's been a process, just like it's been with the previous temples. The Jews merited to have a place where they could commune with the Almighty. And that was first with the sanctuary in the desert, and then the various sanctuaries for almost 400 years until the temple was built, which lasted for 400 years. But then the temple got knocked down because Jews were doing things wrong. They were exiled. When they got the acts cleaned up, they got the second temple. And that lasted again for about 400 years. And it was only because the Jews didn't have their act together. Well, that temple got knocked down, too. And we're told when we'll get it together, we'll get another act together. So it's been a whole process of Jews having to go out into the world. It's, in a way, it's beneficial. I mean, there is a plant called a wandering Jew. Not a pejorative. As we see, the Jewish populations in the last 2,000 years have moved from Spain, from Rome and Iraq to Spain to Central Europe, and back to North Africa, and then to Poland, and then Russia, et cetera, and then into the New World, America, and into Australia. And so populations are constantly moving. And it says that why Jews have to be moved all over the place is to encourage Congress. Is to get people who are, that for every reason the Almighty deemed it, that they should be not born not Jewish, to come back and reestablish the Judaism which is inherent within them. And then in addition to that, it means making every part where the Jew goes, every part of the world where the Jew goes, has to be made into a more holy, godly place. And this is our function. So in a way, it is a whole chadyadya. It is a whole process, the whole long step. And it doesn't just say, well, God, we did. Are we ready? No, we have to just push it that little bit further. The Baba Terebi said in 1988, we pushed enough. Now all we need to do is push the Almighty. Everything that needs to be done is done. And what we're waiting for is Va'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'shachta HaMalach HaMalach. We're waiting for the Almighty to come and slaughter the angel of death. And we married it last year at the end of our Haggadah. We said, Lashana Habog Yerushalayim, that next year we should be in Jerusalem with the temple, with Mashiach, etc. Well, next year is in less than 2 weeks. Let's hope and pray. Speaking of hope and praying, we've got to take a quick commercial break. We're going to have this amazing Pacific story coming up for you. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Easiest way? Go to rabbifinman.com. I am especially available now. I like to tell people 24/6. You need to reach out if you need to talk to me. If you feel like you need to talk to somebody, reach out to me. I can tell of my cell phone on the radio. I was just trying to do that 25 years ago. But contact me at rabbifinman.com. And if you need to talk, that's right on the contact page. Now, things are still doing. My wife is complaining that even though I'm at home and my operation to our home, she has to schedule appointments this evening, and she's the co-director of Jewish Ferndale and Jewish Hour. So, but things are still happening. We're still doing. And you can go to my Facebook page, Herschel Finman, and find out what's doing, how stuff is going to be done on Monday night. Connie did a wonderful drawing. They're still up there on my Facebook page. This is an amazing drawing. My wife is very funny. And she is, as people have looked at, she was just, it was amazing. And then people sent her a crystal goblet, which is, from what I understand, I don't know about drawing, which is not an easy thing to do. But people sent some amazing things that they had drawn, taken from her lesson. And so you'll want to check out the Herschel Finman Facebook page as well during this time. And we're here for you. You want to make sure that you're upbeat and happy, because one of the best ways to strengthen your immune system, scientifically proven, is to be happy. And it's just something about those endorphins and dopamine and serotonin and whatnot, all those other things that your brain produces that really helps strengthen your immune system. And so that's what we're here for. Of course, on rabbifinman.com, the bills still go on. We still need your help. And We needed even more now since our activities have been curtailed face-to-face. We're not getting the face-to-face donations that we were. So if you can do the online one, so then let's go to RebeccaFinman.com and go to donations.com and donate there. Our story, if you just bring down the music just a little bit there, Tony, just a little bit. I'm trying to coordinate the line. Just bring that down a little bit. There we go. Fine. So the story involves the Eliezer of Lizhansk. Eliezer of Lizhansk was the son of the famous Elimelech of Lizhansk. And Elimelech of Lizhansk in his last days was eating. And his son, Eliezer, said, "Father, you have to eat." And he said, "I can't eat. I can't relate to food anymore. But if you could bring me a soup from this inn, from this certain town, I would eat that." Shortly after Elimelech of Lizhansk died, and several years later, this Eliezer of Lizhansk had an opportunity to be in that city. And so he went to this inn and said, "I'd like to stay here, and I'd like you to feed me." And she said, "We people don't come here a lot. We don't have a lot of money. I can make you a bean soup and maybe some like simple bread." He was brought to him, and he tasted it, and he said, "It's incredible. This tastes like otherworldly. What is, how did you make it?" And she said, "Listen, I don't have anything. All I had was beans." And so I threw some beans in some hot water and let them cook. And I said, "Rabbeinu Shalom, master of the universe, I'm a poor woman, and I have nothing to feed this righteous person. But you, master of the universe, you have the all kinds of spices and flavors that you keep in the Garden of Eden. So why don't you just blend some of those and put them in the soup for me?" When the man heard this and understood that this woman was a very saintly woman and understood his father's request. That's going to do it. I hope you have a chance to entertain you a bit. I hope you have a chance to educate you a bit. I hope you have a great week. Hope to see you back again next week. Take care.